Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land, into your town, into your home, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of unobtainium. Greetings from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city in the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, your designated driver of the airwaves, and moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophony of conversation. Glad to be back with you once again. Hope you all had a wonderful Thanksgiving weekend and are already walking off that extra pumpkin pie. Tonight, a chilling walk on the dark side. And by that, I don't mean some paranormal menace or threat from outer space. I'm talking about a threat that's much closer to home. The kind of threat that intrudes on our lives when we least expect it, involving sinister forces that are all too human. Murder, mayhem, violence perpetuated by people we know and people we don't. The monsters we speak of tonight are the kind that might be your neighbor, someone you might pass on the road, someone in your own family, killers among us. Coming up in 1 hour from now, we explore the twisted tale of a pair of serial killers. It's unusual enough for killers to operate in pairs, not unheard of, but it happens here and there, but pretty unusual. Even more unusual in this case is that they were father and son, a team of guns for hire, contract killers, fire bombers, intimidators. According to lawmen, this father and son team are known to be the primary suspects in at least seven murders for hire, or killing of witnesses, though the real number that they perpetuated is probably much higher. They operated throughout the West, but were based here in Las Vegas during one of the wildest periods of this city's short but colorful history. They did jobs for casino owners, for labor union bosses, and for the mob. Their bloody reign culminated in the kidnapping and murder of our state's most powerful labor leader. And the story that was told for more than 30 years is that this was nothing more than an extortion plot, a random kidnapping. Grab a guy, get his family or someone to pay a ransom, and then you move on to something else. But the true story is far more complicated, far more devious, and with implications that reached far beyond Nevada. The person who had the clearest and closest view of the deadly agenda carried out by Tom and Granby Hanley is the woman who lived with him, heard their stories firsthand, saw what they did, and might have been groomed to join the family business. She was known back then as Wendy Hanley, now Wendy Mazeros. She and veteran journalist Joe Schoenman have collaborated on a new book about an incredibly wild ride. It's called Vegas Ragdoll. Both for Wendy and for Las Vegas, it was a wild ride. And Wendy and Joe will be joining me an hour from now to spin this tale. It sounds like something that was made up by a Hollywood screenwriter, but it is all too true. Before that, we'll explore another true-life crime drama. As you might recall, earlier this year, I hosted a Coast program about the disappearance of an elderly man on Interstate 80. What we know is that he had a roadside encounter with a big rig trucker, might have struck up some sort of a relationship, that he was pulled over by Highway Patrol troopers out in the desert, and then, poof, he disappeared. Not a day goes by that I don't receive at least one email from Coast a listener asking for an update on the case of Patrick Carnes. His story and the story of his family's search for answers seems to have touched the Coast audience in a profound way. Well, the search for Pat Carnes continues. His son Jim agreed to join us again to update us on the investigation, how the family is still hoping to get some sort of a final answer about what happened out there on a lonely stretch of dark highway in a part of the country that people call the Big Empty. Jim Carnes will join me in a couple of minutes, and we will make time to open up the phone lines as well in case you want to chime in or ask a question or get a little update information of your own. For those of you not familiar with the basic story, I posted the TV report that I aired back in July. It's there on the Coast to Coast website if you want to take a look at it before we begin that interview. Webmaster Tim Binal has helped me compile my usual list of Knapp's news items, things I figured you might find of interest. In keeping with tonight's theme of real-life mysteries, there's an update on the Natalie Wood case. As you know by now, authorities in L.A. are reopening the investigation into the death of actress Natalie Wood. They have new testimony from the guy who was captain of the yacht on that fateful night that Ms. Wood died. And he's been telling cops there was something fishy about the death, that he heard Natalie Wood and her husband Robert Wagner battling, yelling, arguing just prior to Wood going into the water. In case you missed this little tidbit, we have this item posted on the website. The yacht captain has now passed a polygraph test. Take that for what it's worth, but, you know, police often use polygraph tests not so much as evidence because that lie detector stuff is not really admissible in most cases, criminal cases anyway, but as an early indication of whether a potential witness is being truthful or not, so they know whether to press forward with their probe, whether it's worth their time. We have a news story posted on the website. Check it out when you get a moment. And on the subject of criminals, the biggest of them all, the corporate criminals, who have taken the world's economy to the brink while laughing all the way to the bank, literally and figuratively, are the subject of a new study, an article which looks at the prevalence of psychopaths in big business. And when I say psychopaths, I don't mean necessarily cold-blooded murderers, but rather people who just don't care about the larger consequences of their actions. It's all about them. Interesting article looking at the mindset of some of these big shots who have helped to loot our country and will do it again if they get a chance. Along the same lines, an article I'll bet most of you did not see. It's about a long overdue audit of the Federal Reserve. I thought this was one of those things when I first read it. It's one of those things that somebody was just making up on the internet and passing around. But turns out you can verify it. It's about a long overdue audit of the Federal Reserve. It's worth talking about in some detail, and maybe we will at some point, either tonight or in a future program. What did the auditors find? They found the Fed has been bailing out poor little corporate giants secretly to the tune of $16 trillion, that's trillion with a capital T, dollars. And we didn't get to hear anything about it. If this one doesn't set you off after you read this, someone needs to check your pulse because you might have expired already. Oh, and plenty of interest this week in the D.B. Cooper mystery. One of our loyal listeners is a guy named Guy Clifton. He's a veteran reporter for the Reno Gazette Journal. And he co-wrote an excellent piece about the 40th anniversary of the D.B. Cooper disappearance. I'm sure that Ian Punnett has talked about this a little bit, including in this article some details related to events in and around Reno, both before D.B. Cooper disappeared and after. If you haven't read this, check it out when you get a moment. Final item in Knapp's news tonight, it's about arch skeptic James Randi. You know that name? He's better known maybe as the Amazing Randi. Hardcore debunker of all things paranormal, especially ESP. Well, the Amazing Randi somehow overlooked some sleight of hand that was happening right under his own nose, allegedly anyway, involving a man who's been his partner for many years. Those of you who have followed Randy's career, I think, will find this of some interest, I think. A couple of news stories to mention. I know exactly what a lot of you have been doing this weekend, and that is spending. If there's one thing Americans are still good at, it's buying stuff that we don't need. We are the greatest consumers in the world, bar none. The nation's retailers say we really outdid ourselves on Black Friday and through this weekend. Total spending over the four-day weekend following Thanksgiving reached a record $52.4 billion. That's up 16% from the $45 billion we spent last year, according to a survey by the National Retail Federation released today. All together now. We are number one. You know, did you see the video of the lady who used pepper spray to repel some fellow shoppers who were after the same merchandise she wanted to buy? That's a sad story in more ways than one, isn't it? And I'll bet there were thousands of less violent but equally sad incidents of shoving and pushing and yelling to get whatever toy or electronic gizmo some shopper wanted. A record 226 million consumers shopped in stores and online between Thursday and Sunday. That's up from 212 million last year. Individual shoppers spent more too, an average of about $398 a piece. And now it's on to Cyber Monday, right? Patience is wearing thin among authorities in Philadelphia and LA regarding the Occupy movement. Mayors in both cities are saying the encampments of protesters have got to go. They're concerned about public health issues that have arisen. In Philly, they need to move the protesters so they can begin a public works project that's been planned for months. L.A. wants to make other arrangements so these protesters can continue, if they're so inclined, just not in the same spot. So far, so good for NASA's latest mission to Mars. This weekend, as you probably know, the space agency sent out its latest version of the Mars rover, a great big monster truck sort of a version. And this time, the robot will actually look for signs of life, a task that NASA has seemingly done everything it could to avoid doing in previous missions. A lot of spacecraft have been sent to Mars over the years, as listeners to this program know. And there's a distinctively spotty record by the U.S. and Russia. A lot of these things have just disappeared or failed to work. So we'll see if this one manages to land. And we'll have to hope that they will be honest in sharing whatever information they glean up there once they get up there and start looking around. I know I'm holding my breath. How about you? Time now for a quick break. When we come back, Jim Carnes here to speak about the mystery of Interstate 80 and the disappearance of his father. I'm George Knapp, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to the program. I'm George Knapp. You know, back in July, I hosted a Coast show that received more input from you listeners than anything else I've ever done on this program. Listeners really got into the story of Patrick Carnes. He's a Reno man in his early 80s who vanished along a stretch of lonely desert highway earlier this year. His family has been tortured by the fact that there are no real solid answers about what happened. Hundreds of Coast listeners sent in ideas about the case. You looked at the story, you looked at some photos that we posted, and you gave us your thoughts. And all of those ideas were passed along and then pursued by the Humboldt County Sheriff's Department. They've went through all of them. At least that's what they've told me. So here we are months later, but the case remains a mystery. We thought an update on the show might jog some memories or maybe reach someone else who did not, I might have information out there, but didn't hear the shows previously. So Jim Carnes, Patrick's son, has agreed to come back on and talk with us. Jim, thank you very much. I appreciate you being
here. You're quite welcome, George. Thank you so much.
Listen, I know it had to be, this has to be tough to dredge this all up, but you agree that it's necessary. You're hoping that something might be jogged or loosened from somebody's brain who might have information. Let's start this way. Can you tell me what it was like for Thanksgiving? I mean, I can imagine for your family, this is the first one where you don't have your dad, and it's got to be hanging over the whole family on an occasion like that.
It was very rough for all of us, especially having Lucky at dinner. But we're still hoping that we will find Dad, and we're just trying to, like everyone, trying to solve this mystery.
Let's bring our listeners sort of up to date. Those who didn't hear the previous broadcast, can you help me do a recap of what happened, where your father was when he disappeared, what the circumstances were?
Well, basically, he was looking to, he's been retired for years, but he was looking to move into a assisted living home, which here in Reno, they have a spot that evidently they have quite a few all over the country. But anyway, Dad's got quite a few relatives back in Toledo, Ohio, Michigan area. So he drove out there with Lucky the dog to check out some of the retirement places out there, and went out there, looked at them, and decided that, no, he was going to stay here in Reno. And that's when, on the way back from Toledo on Interstate 80, is where he was pulled over by the Highway Patrol in eastern Nevada. And then, 9 hours later is when we found it. The sheriff saw his car in just outside of Winnemucca.
As we know, there were some tantalizing clues that were recorded by the Highway Patrol trooper who pulled him over there. Tell me about that part.
Well, that's the Highway Patrol had a big rig semi-truck pulled over for some sort of traffic violation. And it was 9 o'clock at night, so they're close to it. It's dark out, and a truck drove by in the fast lane, which in Nevada, if it's an emergency vehicle, you're supposed to pull over to the outside lane. And of course, the truck was on the outside lane that passed, and then Well, within a few seconds, there was my dad, and he was on the inside lane, which is a traffic violation. So the highway patrolman left the truck that he had already pulled over and then sped after my dad, who was in the wrong lane, and pulled him over. And that's the video clip that has been broadcast of a truck flying by at 75, 80 miles an hour that we're still trying to find out what truck company that is.
Sounds like your father had developed some sort of a roadside relationship with the driver, like they were traveling along together. Maybe they had a cup of coffee somewhere along the line, right?
Right. He mentioned in the video clip that he was just following that truck to Elko, which you can easily hear. And so that's why we're thinking that maybe he had, like you're saying, developed a relationship with that truck driver in so, that truck that was in front of Dad's car.
So quite a few miles down the road at a turnoff point closer to Wendover, they found your father's car the next morning.
No, actually, they found my dad's car in just east of Golconda.
Oh, I'm sorry, Winnemucca. I said Wendover. It's Winnemucca.
Yeah, Winnemucca. East of Winnemucca is where they found. It's roughly about 150 miles from where the highway patrolman had pulled them over to where we had found the car.
And as you were to learn later, chillingly, something else had happened, something kind of similar at that same exact same spot years before.
Right. That's a woman, I believe she was in her mid-50s. They found her truck there, her car, small pickup, at that same exit that Dad's car was found, and they found her car approximately 5 years ago at the same exact exit.
All right, your father couldn't have walked away, or at least couldn't have walked very far. I mean, he's not entirely frail, but he's no spring chicken, and he had Lucky the dog with him.
Exactly. But here again, it was dark, cold at night. I just can't see him walking out there, walking for help at night when it's in the mid-30s.
Undersheriff Curtis Cull there in Humboldt County has worked so closely with your family and worked so hard going up and down the highway and tracking down all these leads. He had told us when we went up to look at it that there, you know, he was at least exploring the possibility that there's a serial killer that's operating there, not only because of your dad's disappearance and the other lady who disappeared at the same spot, but other unsolved cases, people along the highway. Do you still entertain that as a possibility?
I am not throwing out any possibilities. It's still wide open. No, we're not throwing anything out. That's it's still a possibility, George. I mean, it as bad as it sounds, there are a lot of good truck drivers, companies, very good people. I've received numerous calls from truckers, from people that that are very good people calling up and just wondering what they can do to help and how they can help. And but it, you know, like anything in society, it just takes a few of us to ruin it for everybody. So we're not downgrading any aspect of any type of investigation.
Well, I don't know if you I don't know if you heard the introduction, but I mean, we were overwhelmed with the response to the program that you and Curtis Kull did and brought the TV broadcast as well. And I know I got hundreds and hundreds of messages that I passed along to the investigators. A lot of them were the same kind of thing, just truckers who were guessing, hey, that looks like XYZ trucking company. And I know that Curtis Kull looked at all that material. I don't know how much of it you got to see. Did you get to see it as well?
Well, I've seen the logs of people that have called up, and they're investigating each and every call. I haven't seen each and every log, every call that came in, but I received quite a few, and I passed them on to Curtis and.
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll examine some of the clues that came in, and then we'll open up the phone lines to see if there are any more out there. Neil Young taking us into the break. Stay with us, everyone, on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with Jim Carnes about the disappearance of his father, Patrick Carnes, earlier this year on Interstate 80. A couple of other people disappeared on that same stretch of road, raising the possibility that a serial killer or killers is operating along that stretch of highway. We'll get into that and review some of the clues that came in from Coast to Coast listeners right after this. Stay with us. Jim Carnes, as you know, hundreds of ideas and tips and thoughts came in from Coast listeners and from others around the country who saw the news stories, including from truckers. A lot of truckers who had ideas about what that rig was, who it belonged to, what the writing on the truck or the cab might have said. Do you happen to know how law enforcement handled those leads, those ideas? Did they follow them up?
Well, we've sent them to actually quite a few different labs. In fact, currently, the Highway Patrol film is at two different labs for enhancing the photo. So it's with people that know how to enhance photos right now as we speak.
From what I understand, Curtis Kull had sent letters to all kinds of trucking companies. Any trucking company that was mentioned by one of the listeners who said, I think I recognize that, he sent them a letter, and he got responses from a lot of them. I don't know if he got them from all of them. Do you know much about that part of it?
Yeah, they didn't. I do know a little bit about it. They did not receive 100% cooperation from the different trucking companies. They did receive letters back saying, or phone calls saying, you know, that they don't come out this far, as far as the western part of the country. But other than that, that's where it is.
I know at one point there had been some kind of communication from the FBI. They have a task force that deals with serial truckers, serial killers who may be truckers. Do you know any that part of the investigation, whether those guys are in communication with Humboldt County authorities?
That I believe. Well, I know they've been talking recently. I don't know. The sad thing about this any type of investigation like this, to bring in the FBI, there has to be a crime. We don't have a crime as of yet. We have a missing man. That's the most frustrating part about this whole ordeal, George, is that it's we don't really have a crime yet. We have a missing person.
Has your family reached a point where you're fairly certain you know that what happened, or you do you still have hope that your father's coming back?
We still have hope, yes, but as the days go on, it doesn't look like he'll be coming back. But you know, they're just like the Elizabeth Smart case in.
I know what you mean. You have to still be wondering why in the world somebody as genial, as likable as your father, no threat to anyone, would be pulled over and something dastardly happened to him.
Yeah, that's the mystery, is maybe it was just some folks that that's what they do. I mean, they're looking for a quick dollar or looking for someone that possibly could be vulnerable, whether they be an elderly gentleman or a woman driving the on, you know, the roads at nighttime. I can't tell you how I would like to tell everyone, please be careful out there.
I know that you and your family have traveled up and down that road. You're putting up posters. I think you had mentioned to me in an email that there's plans for maybe a billboard. Has any of that produced anything that was at least tantalizing of interest to you and the law enforcement?
Well, with the as far as the billboard, hopefully it'll be, they're going to install it this week. I've got word last week from the billboard company, Saunders. Sorry if I had a plug in there, George. But
no, that's okay. That's all right.
They've got the sign ready, and he said that this week coming up tomorrow, sometime this week, that they were going to put the sign up. And you know how the weather is, too. So, but it's hopefully they put it up this week, and we can generate a lot of phone calls with that. We have Dad's picture on it, and then a secret witness phone number for Humboldt County.
I know some Reno's media attention has been focused on it since our TV story was on, since the radio interview was on. Has that produced any leads? Are they still coming in, trickling in?
Yeah, they're trickling in, and they're going directly right to the sheriff, the undersheriff, Curtis Cole, and his detectives. And they're following each lead and you know, doing the best they can for what they have. It's a tough case because here again they just don't have anything. We've got a car and no dad or no dog, and they vanished. So it's a hard case, for a detective or anyone in law enforcement, I would think.
But you get the feeling that they're still committed to trying to resolve it. I mean, that they're still, that it's under their skin as well, that they want to solve this thing one way or another.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And after myself even being out there driving on the roads and talking to different farmers, people that live out there, miners, they are all very interested in making it a safe place.
Are you still going out? Are you still making trips down the road to put up flyers or find people?
Probably about a month ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, we went out and looked in mine shafts in close proximity to the car. Didn't produce anything, but it was good to just check out some mine shafts and talk to more people and just keep the word out, and hopefully someone had seen something. And also, Curtis, I wanted to mention that if anyone on Interstate 80 in northern Nevada here has ever been on driving Interstate 80, they stop at a rest stop, and if someone can recall being aggressive, begging for money or food or getting a ride, hitchhiking, that type of thing. Maybe if anyone knows of anything, if they would please call the Humboldt County Secret Witness Office, and so maybe we could follow up on that. Maybe it's some people that are just, saying that their car broke down. And coming upon people at rest stops.
I would also say if they don't want to call the police or secret witness, they can send a note to us and we'll pass along the information here from coast to coast. I'm going to open up the phone line, see what people have on their minds. Maybe they've got some hints or ideas. Wade in Alberta, Canada on the wild card line. Hi, Wade.
Yeah, gentlemen. I have been down there many, many times, and most trucking companies, even the small ones now, use Qualcomm to track their units, and it's for insurance purposes. So they know where their unit is at any particular time. And those Qualcomm units check in about every 20 minutes. And some trucking companies keep records, and Qualcomm definitely keeps something on file.
And Jim, tell me if I'm correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that is one of the angles that Curtis Call was pursuing, that he had contacted Qualcomm, and I think there's another company that has a similar kind of monitoring device, right?
I think there's
Exactly
two or
right. Plus they have their I can't think of prepay, where they don't have to stop at the edges of states. They can it's like the jet, like Wade is saying, that the there's a chip on board that says, okay, well, you came through this checkpoint at such and such time. But yeah, no, we're following those leads also.
You're absolutely right, Wade. I appreciate the call. You're absolutely right, and that is something that Curtis Call had been and his investigators have been tracking down. The last time I talked to them, though, they had been unable to find any trucking company that would could con they can confirm that they had a vehicle in that area at that time. East of the Rockies, John in Ohio. Hi, John.
How
Hello?
are you?
Okay,
Hi.
what's on your mind?
I hope he finds his dad, but I'm kind of confused on something. Maybe he can clear it up. In Ohio, we have a law that if the highway patrol has someone pull over you, if you can safely get over in the passing lane to do that, or slow down in the lane that you're in. In a way, it sounds to me like they were together, and then in a way it doesn't. I mean, why would you, if you were with someone, why wouldn't you either pull up, ahead of them or behind them and pull over?
Well, I think, John, I think the truck moved into the left lane because he knows that the law, and possibly my dad did not know of that law. I know I myself, when I heard about that, I did not know of that law either, of, pulling over, or like you're saying, slowing down if it's not safe to pull over. But the truck was definitely in the fast lane, and Dad's car was in the slower lane.
And he definitely makes a reference to them traveling together, or at least somehow in tandem. And if you look at the video from the trooper's vehicle earlier, it sure looks like they were traveling together. So, John, that's a good point. I think you make a good point, but it's something that I think the lawman had considered. West of the Rockies, Mark in San Diego. Hi, Mark. How you doing?
Hey, Jim, I just want to know two things. Was your dad's car broken down when they found it? And also, has there been any activity on his credit cards or ATMs?
No, no to both questions. No, the car was not broke down.
It was
Left
abandoned.
and it was abandoned, exactly.
Keys in it?
I'm sorry, what?
Were the keys in it?
Keys.
The keys to the car, was the keys in the car?
Yeah, not that I know of. They
Okay.
may have been. There's things that the, obviously I wasn't there when they took the car into the, when the sheriff came and picked the car up. They
I
took
don't
it to
recall. I don't recall them mentioning that the keys were there. I mean, one of the scenarios, Mark, that had been explored, I guess, by the investigators, is that he was picked up and got in for some reason, got into a truck, into the cab of a truck. Maybe he was tired, and they invited him in to take a ride, and somebody else would drive his car. They've explored the possibility of maybe a husband and wife, man and woman team that might have put him at ease. Any other thoughts along those lines, Jim? Any other clues or anything come in along those lines?
They have. Here again, I'm not privy to a lot of the information that goes directly to the sheriff. They're following every lead they get as far as any type of scenario like that.
Do you get a sense from the sheriff that they think it is still a solvable disappearance, a solvable crime, I guess?
Oh, yes. No, I truly believe that. It's very solvable. Yes.
I always thought, you know, in working on the story and talking to you and the investigators, the thing that might solve it would be the dog with Lucky. You know, Lucky is kind of a distinctive looking dog that even if someone did something bad to your dad, they might have let the dog go, and that somebody out there might find the dog wandering on the highway and just not be aware that anybody is looking for your father.
Well, and that's, I was really pushing that months ago, still am. Calling up different dog pounds, that not only here in Nevada, but in California, or go back in Utah, or up in Idaho. We have called and with the Humane Society with dog pounds. Of Lucky had a chip in the back of his neck. He is a humane dog pound survivor. So he's got a chip in the back of his neck. So if we do find a dog that is similar to Lucky, or if someone that has a dog that's similar to Lucky, and if they can get the chip checked with a veterinarian or from a county that has the meter to read it, we'll know if we can find Lucky. And that was one of our major investigations to try and find that.
I want to ask you one other. I'm sorry. I want to ask you one other thing, and then we'll go back to the phone lines. It's about psychics. I know you and I, when we first met, we talked about the possibility of employing a psychic. Not that it's solid information, but you're willing to try anything. And I know we had a remote viewer on this program give you some initial information. That didn't check out, though, did it?
No, well, there was a psychic that went out to the site about 2 to 3 weeks ago, who is going to come back and come back out to the site, hopefully soon. But no, they. I've had other psychics even here in Reno that I've seen that have just mentioned different things, and I've passed that on to the sheriff to, you know, maybe compile all of it and then fit the pieces together and maybe get a good strong lead out of it. But nothing's come up of it yet. But no, we have full faith in any and everything, George.
Anybody tell you, any of the psychics say they think your father's alive?
They have mentioned to me that you're my dad as well. He is in no pain. I mean, they didn't really say alive or have gone to the other side. I know one psychic said, yes, he's already gone past, but he's doing fine. He's with my mother. But other than that, no.
That's tough. That's tough stuff to take. You know, it's tough both ways for somebody to tell you psychically they've decided your dad is passed on. Or I don't know what's tougher on your family, to tell him that he's still alive. That's tough.
Yeah. Either way, it's until we have some hopefully some concrete information. It's all speculative. You know, we want some answers, and it's hard to get them when it's there isn't anything, you know, you just have to go lead by lead, and it just takes forever to go through all of them.
I imagine you get some crazy clues as well, or even cruel things that come in from people. You must have heard some wild stuff in the months since this happened. I'll tell you what, Jim. That music tells us we're out of time. I appreciate you coming back on. I know this is difficult for you to talk about, but I sure hope that all those Coast listeners out there who are now interested in this story will think about it. If you hear anything, please contact us here at the program or the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office. There's information online, Secret Witness. Jim Carnes, thanks very much. My best to your family.
Thank you so much, George, and thank you to everyone out there. Thank you so much.